Hey guys, you're listening to Faction Fandom, where we talk about the Divergent series by Veronica Roth. I'm your host, Stephanie.
And I'm your host, Cherie.
Today is going to be really kind of a special episode because we're not talking about Divergent today, are we, Cherie?
No, not technically.
Well, we're not talking about the book anyway. We are talking about the transfer, though. We are not going to do news. We're not going to do anything really special with the episode, but we want to talk about the transfer, and we will give you a little bit of a manifesto on the end just to send you with something fun. At this point, the book has been out for at least 3 weeks. We both have read it. We both loved it. What were your initial thoughts on the transfer, Cherie?
Okay, well, this is my first Tobias story. I didn't read the other one that's in his point of view.
Shame on you.
I know, shame on me. So I was just thinking it was really good to get inside his head to see where he's at versus Triss. And so I really enjoyed it. Well, technically, I mean, it's really sad. So
I know, isn't it? He's just, poor kid.
Like, I knew all that stuff, but of course it's totally different when you're reading it from somebody's point of view. Your heart's in there and it's harder to read.
It's more, what's the word? Visual? It's not visual. Graphic. It's more graphic.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so you haven't read Free 4.
Correct.
I'm going to go on a whim here. I'm going to tell you because you'll want to know this because I want to talk to you about it. In Free 4, all of the characters that are in the transfer, they're not in Free 4. It's basically the knife-throwing scene from Tobias's perspective. And I just wanted to tell you a little point about it. He makes the point, you know, in his mind or whatever, when he looks at Eric, you see how he sees Eric. And you understand what his thoughts on Eric are. He makes a note that Eric killed Amar.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Maybe, it's kind of, it's Veronica Roth. It's not, she didn't come right out and say that he did kill Amar. But he makes this point of, and I don't know what the quote is exactly, I don't have it up, but he makes this point of saying, implying that if it weren't for Eric, Amar would still be here.
Okay.
Or something to that nature. So now that we have met Amar in the transfer, it's kind of worrisome to see how this is going to play out.
Oh, yeah. And they did not start off very well either.
Mm-mm. But the transfer itself, it talks about Tobias's transfer into Dauntless, obviously. It opens up from Tobias's aptitude test, and then it transcends into his choosing ceremony and, like, the first couple of initiations into Dauntless for him. And then the next book called The Initiate, we'll talk a little bit more about his initiation stage.
Okay. Very cool.
Like I said, the book opens up with Tobias's aptitude test. Who is preparing his aptitude test but Tori? Which is kind of cool, I thought, because
she did
Triss's.
Yeah, in the first book.
I've always wondered this. Okay, spoilers, people. But we know Tobias is divergent, but he didn't get a divergent aptitude test. I mean, he didn't get divergence on his aptitude test.
Yeah.
He knew how to work the aptitude test. I'm guessing from what his father taught him and what he learned from him, and how to manipulate the test into giving the regular standard aptitude.
Okay,
results.
And I want to talk about this later in the show. I want to talk about his dad solely on what I think of him and a couple of ideas I had while reading about him. But his dad definitely trained him to not, because I think his dad knew that he's divergent. And I think his dad knows it's a bad thing. And I think his dad trained him for how to do the test.
Yeah, he didn't want to draw suspicion.
Correct.
Because he is an abnegation. We know later on in the series that abnegation are the ones who hold the big secrets, quote unquote. And after his test, he has kind of this, I don't know, I kind of think of it as like a climax. Like, I don't know. They talked about him running away,
mm-hmm.
From the school. I had this whole theme song going on in my head of, like, thematic him running and jumping over buildings or something. I don't know. But he, like, I don't know, he seems like this very flustered, skitsy kid. He, like, feels
tense all the time. He
doesn't seem
as together as Triss is.
No.
Triss is, like, a strong female lead. And Tobias isn't
strong
yet. His dad, broke him down.
He's vulnerable. He's a very vulnerable person. Now, he is strong. He's just he's not four yet.
I don't think he's four yet. This is definitely
his emotional state.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you think about, they only refer to each other as Tobias whenever they're by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like he's showing her his vulnerability. So he's got two sides of himself. He has four, and then he has Tobias, which is his vulnerable side. And this is Tobias, obviously. But, you know, he runs away or whatever, and then he ends up coming to this factionless house, and he meets this factionless man, who is kind of weird, but he starts talking about his mom.
It's...
Who has...
I just assume that we're going to see more of this in the next books, because I don't remember him being anything to do with in Divergent or Insurgent.
You don't remember Insurgent either?
I don't remember anything.
Oh my goodness. Okay, well, this will be a lot of fun for you. So, yeah, but the factionless guy, I hate calling him the factionless guy. Can we give him a name?
The dude.
The dude. Okay, fine. The dude starts talking about his mom. Like, he talks about how his mom was a nice person and yada, yada, yada. Then he's like, you look like your mom, you know, but like Tobias can tell he's lying. We don't know how, but he can. He's like, why would this guy know about my mom? It's kind of, you know, it's for those of us who remember the book, it's a beautiful, foreshadowing of what's to come later.
Wait, what's the foreshadow? Because I don't remember.
Exactly.
No, you have to tell me the foreshadow.
Oh my goodness. Well, he thinks his mom is dead. He says in the transfer that his mom has been dead for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, she died a long time ago. So for this factionless guy to talk about his mom so, like, recently or so detailed like that, it's different for him. Because he doesn't know that his mom is actually alive. You do remember that part, right?
No, okay. I do not remember whether his mom was dead or not. But this makes more sense.
The entire time I was reading about the dude, I sat there and thought, oh my gosh, this guy is so obvious. And you're probably thinking,
I'm over this here is like, really strange. Oh, Tobias' mom's dead. This is so sad.
Gosh, Sheree. All right, well, she comes back an insurgent. I can't believe you don't remember that. This is going to be so much fun. Yeah, so he talks to the factionless guy, and he can tell he's lying, but he ends up leaving because the guy's a creeper. He needs to get out of there. Remember, he's antsy. He can't be in one place for too long. Oh, my gosh. And then he goes home, and this is where I broke down, Sheree. He goes home, and he's, like, talking about how he's not allowed to be out in public when his dad has people over. Like, he can't be seen with his dad.
This is actually a typical trait of somebody who has his father's problems. They often do that.
What are his father's problems?
His father beats him.
Well, yeah, but his father is kind of meticulous about not showing that he beats him.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's a typical trait for an abusive parent or an abusive husband or probably an abusive wife that they have to, like, control who they're out with and whether they can be seen with their friends or not. It's a typical trait.
As much as I'm fixated on Caleb for the third book, I just don't think I'm ever going to find this out, but I really want to know what Tobias's dad, what made him become that way. I always assume that people who are like this, who are abusive like this, come from an abusive, you know, it derived from somewhere. I mean, that's my assumption. I just don't see people as being born evil like this or being born cruel or hateful like this.
You know, there's like a long-running argument of whether people are inherently good or inherently evil. So we could debate into that for hours.
We shouldn't do that then.
But as far as I'm concerned, I just read a book called Dreamland by Sarah Dessen. I read, you know, my Sarah Dessen books. Mm-hmm. And the kid in there that was abusive got it because his father was abusive. And his father was abusive because his father was abusive. But knowing somebody who is abusive, they just got it because they had problems. It was exterior. It was like a way for them to release their anger, just not on, they are not thinking straight.
Yeah. So there could be something wrong with him in the head. Okay, so here's this bottom line question. Then do you think his dad is divergent?
Okay, I've already said this stuff. I think everybody's...
Do you think at this point his dad is divergent?
Okay, should I explain what I think? Because I think everybody's divergent.
From what I understood last time, I thought you meant that if given the option, because everyone's sort of brainwashed into thinking that they can only choose one thing, they aren't not divergent. Right. But when they come to realize that this divergent thing exists and that it's actually very common and very normal,
right,
and a good thing for people to be because it's going to bring about the, you know, the good times of the world or whatever, mm-hmm, then they will become divergent. Mm-hmm. And then everybody will embrace that.
Yes. Okay, that's I see what your question is now. Got it. Okay. Do I think his dad's divergent already? Yes. I don't think his dad can be controlled. And abnegation isn't allowed to take out their anger on other people. So the fact that he is already says that he's not doing abnegation things, which already means he's already divergent.
Okay. Yeah, I just thought that was a kind of a... It's one of those things that you always think about, but you never talk about because nobody ever reads the book.
I do remember something from the books, and that's remember thinking that his father was in a place of power. And they give the places of power to abnegation because they think that they can't be corrupted. But of course, we know that divergence exists. So people can be corrupted because...
Within abnegation, yeah.
Because they can be in more than one faction. And so I definitely think his father is corrupted with power. I think he's evil and I think he's abusive, obviously, and I don't like him at all. And I hope maybe he has some redemption later because as of right now, I just want him to die.
Oh, I don't want him to have redemption. I want him to die.
I want him
to be killed off. People who are like that, and another topic I could go on forever too, but people who have that kind of long-lasting dominance and long-lasting abuse without redemption. On the one hand, Caleb's young, and he only knows what people have told him at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Marcus is older, he's more mature, he's more wise, and he's a council member. He knows a lot about this whole divergence in society thing that they're going through. I don't have any... What's the word? I have no feelings for Marcus and wanting him to redeem himself. I think he should crawl in the hole and die.
Well, I think that everyone deserves forgiveness, of course. And
Sheree, you're going to... Oh my gosh. You pull out this good person card. Whatever.
I'm just saying.
I am not a bad person because I want him to die. I am a normal person because I want him to die. I'm just saying,
if she wrote it that way, if she wrote him to be redeemable, I wouldn't mind because I think that... I mean, I definitely think he's past his second chance, but I think that there has to be hope for everybody or else, you know, what's there to be hopeful for?
Okay, well, I'll tell you what then. He can redeem himself by dying for this.
Okay, yeah.
If they're in a situation, he can give himself up for his son.
Yeah,
for he gives some type of little redemption for that.
He's about to be executed for being divergent, and his father steps in and takes his place and saves his son, and then he will have redemption and be like, okay. I loved you all the time, and he pulls like a Snape on him, you know, and we see all this beautiful
backstory. No, he cannot pull a Snape. No. No way.
Probably not.
We should. Poor Snape. I have to finish reading those. And, you know, he runs up to his room and everything, and he has this trunk that his mom gave him years ago before she died, quote unquote. And he keeps all of these little, I don't know, a bunch of random stuff in it, but he doesn't want his dad to know about it because he feels like it's a part of him that he doesn't want his dad to see. So when his dad comes up to his room, he has to like hide the trunk, but he like locked the door. So whenever his dad comes to his room, I mean, his dad knows that he locked the door.
Mm-hmm.
He's already, you know, like, skeptical of Tobias anyway. And so when he comes in and he finds the trunk, like, I feel so bad for Tobias. He's, like, such a beaten-down puppy. Anyway, but yeah, and he says, this is self-indulgent. Why do you have this selfishness in my house? Like, he goes to slap him, you know? But he's like, tomorrow's a choosing ceremony. Tobias is wincing, and he's like, you know, I'm going to be in public tomorrow. So his dad stops, pulls his hand back, he says, fine, and goes and gets his belt and whips him on the back instead.
The next morning, they wake up, and his dad's totally normal. And it makes me sick because we know what happened, and his dad is playing it all cool, like he didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
As if he's not the grossest person in the world, you know? I love what he says. He tells his dad...
They're talking about the choosing ceremony. He's, you know, trying to reassure his son, calm his nerves and make him feel good about himself. And he says, don't worry about the knife. We'll only hear it for a second. And what does Tobias say? He says, don't worry about me handling the pain. I've had a lot of practice. Yeah. He kind of throws that back in his face, but his dad leaves and everything. So they go to the choosing ceremony. And of course, he kind of goes through the same thing Triss goes through where he's got this, I've got to leave. I've got to get out of here, but I don't know anything else. I don't know where I would go. But eventually, what does he do? He chooses Dauntless.
Well, it's kind of cool to see how he comes to the conclusion of Dauntless, because he has to go through the thought of every faction, and he rejects them for basic reasons that I can't remember anymore.
I know he said he was going to choose Amity.
Mm-hmm.
But he looks at all the Amity people and he says they look so happy that they don't deserve somebody as broken as he is.
Which makes me so sad.
I know!
Oh my gosh. Ugh. Anyways, it's okay. It turns out okay for him. I mean, he's great in Dauntless. That's where he finds his strength. So I think it was definitely the right choice.
That's where he meets Triss.
Well.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I was going to get to that, but. Do you think Triss would have liked him if he didn't have his strength? Maybe.
Like, probably. If he wasn't in Dauntless?
Yeah, if he had gone to Amity and...
Oh, no.
Just receded in himself more and more.
No.
Probably not. Okay, so Tobias chooses Dauntless, and then he... Of course, we know how the Dauntless initiation goes, but so he has to get on the train first, and then he gets on the train, and you're so happy for him, and then you find out he's on the wrong train with the wrong people... He's not with the initiates anymore. He's with the other people, which is, we see Tori there again, right?
I was afraid he wasn't going to, we see Tori again, and we see Amar again, or we meet Amar, mm-hmm. sort of. I was afraid when they said he got on the wrong train, that he wasn't going to be able to go through initiation when I first read it. I was like, where are they going to take him? What's he going to do? He's going to get in trouble?
This is kind of cool part, yes. Because he decides he no longer wants to be Tobias right here, which is important. And he doesn't say his name, but he doesn't have a new name yet. He wasn't really thinking of the fact that he was going to have to change personas, but he knows he wants to get away from it. So he just says, you can call me Stiff or whatever.
The people on the Dauntless, adults, I guess I could say, are pretty cool. But, they tell him to get off the train at the right time and everything. So he's a little late in the game, but he jumps off the roof with the other initiates. So now he's in with the initiates again. But the guy he met on the train, Amar, reintroduces himself after they jump off the roof. And he says, I'm Amar, I'm going to be your trainer or whatever. But they do this thing with this group of initiates. They say, you know what, we're going to change it up a little bit. And we're going to put you through what's called a fear landscape first. This is going to tell you what your fears are. Did you think this was...
Which is absurd.
I was about to say, did you think this was wrong of them or bad of them? Because the fear landscape is like the worst part of the Dauntless initiation, right?
Okay, they're right. It probably helps for their initiation, but I think it's absurd because the whole Dauntless initiation is absurd, because I think Dauntless is absurd. I would not want to go through my fear landscape. I do not know how many fears I have. I could name some, yeah. Yeah.
Name some.
I'm afraid of heights. I'm afraid of... Rats? Yeah, I hate rats.
Like, not mice, but rats?
Yeah. Anyways, heights and darkness and murderers and vampires and people trying to murder me. And
my goodness.
Having my back against a window and...
Why are you scared of putting your back against a window?
Because of murderers.
Oh my goodness, you're really scared of being murdered, aren't you?
It's kind of like my biggest fear. I'd probably, in my fear landscape, have to be murdered.
Wow. Like you have to stand there. So you'd be the woman that has to be shot.
No, it would be so much creepier than that. I'd be like in a dark room, and then like I'd be walking through this dark room, and there'd be like a window at the other end of the room and a window behind me, and nowhere to go because there's no walls that I can back up against. And then all of a sudden somebody sneaks up behind me and stabs me with a knife.
Oh my goodness. I mean, I guess I'm scared of being murdered too, but it's not one of my biggest fears. Are you scared of death, too? Is that something?
No.
Just being murdered by somebody.
I'm just afraid of murderers.
Oh, like the people themselves creep you out.
Yeah, like people who kill for fun.
I see what your point is. Yeah, I don't know what my fears would be either. I would think I'd have a lot. I'm kind of a scared cat. Certain bugs. Not all bugs. Like
roaches.
I don't like roaches. I don't like grasshoppers because they're quick. Bugs crawling on me, I can't stand it, especially when you go out at night and it's dark and there are grasshoppers everywhere where I live. So it's like, if I go out to my car, I try not to go out to my car past 8 o'clock, because when it's dark they're jumping everywhere. I'm scared of heights too, I guess.
I hyperventilate at the top of the bleachers.
You said that. I'm not to that extent. I guess I'm not that scared of it. I guess I'm mostly scared of like people in prison.
In prison?
Well, not necessarily murderers. Certain people freak me out. Just give me the chills.
The tough guys. The tough guys that have done some stuff, you know?
It's not even the tough guys, because sometimes those guys can be defending people too. It's those like psychological people that want to torture you.
Oh, okay,
I
like
guess
Hannibal.
mine would be torturers. Yeah, Hannibal would be one. The guy in Saw.
Okay, yeah.
These are all
Psychopaths.
based on movies. So now that we've gone through our what we're scared of, I guess. They go through their Fairlands gate. Oh, you know, okay, for instance, I would be scared of Eric. Because
He's super shady. Yeah, I can see it.
he gets in the fear landscape, and of course the other initiates can't see what they're seeing, but Amar and the other whoever else is in the room with Amar, the people monitoring his fear,
No,
you
it's
know.
just Amar in the in this book.
Okay, so he's the only one who can see what their fear is. Eric gets in there and he has a couple of fears, but he doesn't freak out about it. He doesn't even cry. He's very controlled and precise.
I
And
wonder,
what's
okay,
I don't
Amar
know.
is the only person that saw Eric's fears, and Amar is no longer with us.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even put that together.
I
That's a
wanted to
very
say it
good
earlier, but I
point.
thought I'd wait for it because I knew we were going to talk about it. But I just think, and
Okay.
Eric, he's strangely calm. It's not like a normal calm. It's like he knows something that we don't know, and now Amar knows, and Amar's gone. Like, oh my gosh.
I know.
I hope.
We'll find that out
Yeah, I
later.
hope so.
People are wary of him now because they see him as this dangerous person.
Okay, so this is the part I wanted to get to. Tobias has four fears, which are jumping off the roof, he's enclosed in a box, shooting an unknown
It's from
woman,
his
and surrounded by his
childhood.
father whipping him with the belt.
The box thing gets me. Jumping off a roof, obviously that could be like a normal fear for him. Maybe he's just naturally scared of heights.
Yeah, and I was wondering, okay,
But
if he's afraid of heights and he goes up after Triss to climb the Ferris wheel with her. And remember, it describes him as being like shaky and stuff. And I always thought, okay, it can't be because he's not like muscular, but now I get it, he's actually afraid of height. And that's really cool that he still climbed the
The
Ferris
Ferris
wheel
wheel with
with
her.
her. And you think, man, he had feelings for her kind of early.
He did. He knew she was an abnegation, though. I think she caught his eye. And then she was the first jumper.
Oh, I think she's definitely an impressive
So.
person. And but I just it just happened so fast, I didn't expect him. But he climbed the Ferris wheel for her, so yeah. So
He
he's afraid
did.
of
He
heights
coped
and
good.
enclosed in a box.
They say it's because, from his childhood punishment of being like locked in the attic. Yeah, I would be scared being, claustrophobic if that were me. So, poor kid. But yeah, then he has to fear shooting an unknown woman. I like this one because at first I didn't get it until I had to really think about it for the podcast, but I always thought, why does he have to shoot somebody? And of course, if you don't remember about Divergent, the woman ends up becoming his mom. But here it's not. It's just a random person. And it's not that he fears shooting somebody. He's scared of what the Dauntless are going to make him do in the future. And he thinks that shooting somebody is going to be like murdering somebody will be one of those things that he has to do eventually. And I
I
think that's
know.
kind of deep. I like
And
that.
I would have never been able to think of a connection like that, but it is deep.
And then his last one, do you want to talk about that?
No.
It's very again graphic, people. The imagery is so great. It makes it so easy for you to like just imagine a motion picture in your head of what's going on. But of course, his last fear, it's not just his dad whipping him with the belt. It's like his dad multiplied by 10, surrounding him in a circle with 10 dads and 10 belts and 10 scary faces saying, "This is for your own good." And yeah. My heart breaks for him. This is sad.
This book should have been called Trigger Warning Abuse. It should not have been called The Transfer.
My gosh, yes. But it's important. It's important because he uses it. Your past leads you to your future, as they say. That's not what they
This is
say, but you know.
definitely at least a good example of people who have to deal with this at home and who haven't found the courage to tell somebody important that
Or
is
to
happening to
leave
them.
or to try to make something happen for themselves.
That
Yeah.
you can bounce back from it, And you can become stronger just because somebody else has done you wrong. It doesn't mean that you have to be weak and terrible and feel like it's all your fault. You can step out of that.
What does he end up doing? I think his dad, one of all of them, whoever it is, he gets hit with the belt, but he musters up some type of strength and stands up and is able to defy that. And that's when the simulation ends. And this is the big deal because there's only four of them. Amar is like, really impressed by that.
Well, the thing about his fear ends when he finds the courage to step up to his dad. And that's kind of important, too. Like, it's not like he had to do anything to his dad. He didn't have to hurt his dad back, and he didn't have to kill him, you know, give his dad what he deserved. He just had to find his own strength because of what his dad was doing to him.
Mm-hmm. He just had to stand up for himself. Not be scared of it.
Yeah. And then it's really cool because he only has four fears. And he breaks the record, which is also really cool.
I love what Amar does. Of course, you know, he's like, yeah, I wouldn't want anyone to know my name either. So he kind of gets why he calls him Steph. But I love what he does at the end. What's the record for four fears? Like, he's in front of everybody. And Amar just kind of asks a random dauntless person, hey, what's the record, by the way? They're like, I don't know, seven or eight. And he's like, I got a kid with four.
You got to give it up for Amar here. He's known Tobias for a whole day, and he has already seen him at his weakest, and he doesn't judge him for it, and he doesn't do anything. He helps him out within, like, seconds. He gets in front of everybody, and he's like, I don't want this kid to be called Stiff forever, okay? That's not a cool name. This guy's awesome because of what he has to deal with and how he can bounce back from that and the fact that he only has four fears. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to think of an awesome name for this kid, and it's going to be Kick Butt, and he assigns him the name Four, and it is just brilliant. So as for me, I really like Amar.
I do too. Another reason why you don't see him later. Maybe Eric doesn't like him because Four likes him. We don't know.
We'll find out.
Yes. I will say that he doesn't necessarily call him Four, though.
No, he does. He calls him Four.
Well, he calls him Four, but then Eric is being a butt, and he's like, hey, what's your name again? Your real name? Doesn't start with, like, an E. Like, he knows what his real name is, I think, but he tries to draw it out or whatever. But I like that Tobias stands up for himself, and, you know, he actually says, you know, my name is Four. Mm-hmm. That's what you can call me. You know, Amar gave him that nickname, but then he stepped up and decided that he was going to embrace it, that everybody would call
him
that.
And Eric's just being a butthead over there, saying things like, what's your real name? Tobias Eaton, I know who you are, dun dun dun.
And we get the end of the chapter story. It was a good segue into what's going to happen next. You know, it's not necessarily the whole initiation process, but it is setting up himself, what his backstory was, and how he got to be called Four. Liked it a lot. Overall, I give it 4 stars.
Same.
I mean, for a short story.
You know, she packed a lot of information in that 30 pages.
She did. Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, to, I mean, just look not at, ramble. You know, Twilight. She kind of rambled that whole 4 books.
She did. She just prolonged a bunch of random stuff. I love books like this, and I love authors like this, where everything that they write, everything that they say has a purpose. Now that we have finished the transfer, I thought it was a good time to read a manifesto. Each faction has their own sort of document that states what their beliefs are and what they trust themselves in. Sheree told me that this would be a good time to do it because they're kind of long. We've seen both Triss and Tobias transfer into Dauntless, so now would be kind of an ideal time to go through the Dauntless Manifesto, right?
I think they're cool. I definitely think we should read them.
So this is what the Dauntless Manifesto says. We believe that cowardice is to blame for the world's injustices. We believe that peace is hard won, that sometimes it is necessary to fight for peace, but more than that, we believe that injustice is more important than peace. We believe in freedom from fear, in denying fear the power to influence our decisions. We believe in ordinary acts of bravery and the courage that drives one person to stand up for another. We believe in acknowledging fear and the extent to which it rules us. We believe in facing that fear no matter what the cost to our comfort, our happiness, or even our sanity. We believe in shouting for those who can only whisper and defending those who cannot defend themselves. We believe not just in bold words, but in bold deeds to match them. We believe that pain and death are better than cowardice and inaction because we believe in action. And then there's a little snippet at the end that says, we do not believe in living comfortable lives. We do not believe that silence is useful. We do not believe in good manners. I thought that one was funny. We do not believe in limiting the fullness of life. We do not believe in empty heads, empty mouths, or empty hands. We do not believe that learning to master violence encourages unnecessary violence.
That's awesome.
That's a big one. We do not believe that we should be allowed to stand idly by. And we do not believe that any other virtue is more important than bravery. So this has been their manifesto since the beginning of the factions. You know, they don't believe that just because they have to learn violence means they have to use it. And they believe in defending the weakless and stuff like that. The factions have changed. You know, I don't know how long they've lasted. I don't know how long it's been since the beginning of faction time or whatever. I didn't take faction history like Triss. But there is a significant difference between the way the Dauntless
But don't have they read it. The manifestos all the time?
Not necessarily.
No, I think they...
I mean, I didn't read them in the book, and I don't remember her saying that they read them at the
book. I don't have my Divergent book in here. I think they read the manifestos at the beginning of the choosing ceremony, but I don't think that they read them to us. I think it just says that they read the manifestos. I don't remember. I might be wrong.
Oh, maybe. I don't remember. If they do read them, the book never tells us that, or, you know, we don't ever hear
right, that's
them
correct.
Reading them in the book. Well, I don't think so, because there comes a point where Will is talking to Triss. I think it's Will, or maybe it's Al. You know, he quotes the Dauntless Manifesto, and he says, "Have you read the Dauntless Manifesto?" And she says, "No." And he says, there's an excerpt in there that says, we believe in ordinary acts of bravery that would drive one person to stand up for another. And she has no idea that that's what that is. So I don't think that they do read them. I think maybe, especially in Dauntless, I think it's more of an erudite thing. I could see the erudite reading them.
I forgot that part.
All of them. And memorizing them. I don't know. I don't see them. You know, they're all about action. They're not about reading. Half of them probably don't know how to read. I don't know.
The, like, school drops off after second grade and they don't have to do anything anymore.
Yeah. You know, I could see them, especially the Dauntless, being some kind of program where they don't have to learn their education, but if they can climb, you know, a 50-foot wall, they're good.
It's like their classes are like how to shoot from 15 foot away and how to draw knives and how to breathe fire.
What does breathing fire have to do with eating?
It's brave.
There's no productivity in it, though. Anyway, Four makes this point that, you know, Eric believes in a certain kind of Dauntless, and Four believes in a certain kind of Dauntless.
And I think that they perfectly represent the two different sides of Dauntless, because Four is strong and fearless, like he's got mm-hmm. four fears, you know? Fearless and wise and beautiful. As to where Eric is kind of edgy and dangerous and on the verge of going too crazy with the fact that he's not afraid of his consequences.
Yeah. And, you know, a large part of it is community. Mm-hmm. I see Eric as a very selfish kind of person. You know, it's all about proving your strength and proving that you are fearless. Not necessarily being brave for the whole of your faction.
Totally true. Yeah.
Whereas Four, you know, I can see him being the kind of person that wants to defend other people in his faction or try to help them or something like that.
Yeah, totally.
Eric, not so much. So that's that. I don't know when I'll read the other ones, but...
We could do one an episode.
They're long.
Then we don't have to.
I don't know. I thought maybe we'd read them when they're relevant.
I think, yeah, I definitely think that one was relevant at the time, and it's
like,
perfect.
Like maybe later in the book when she goes to Erudite, and we get to see the Erudite compound a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll yank that out. All right. So, Shree, what's your book recommendation for
Stephanie,
today?
Stephanie, what's your book recommendation for today?
All righty. I am going to recommend City of Bones by Cassandra Clare. You can make that face all you want, Shree. People give it a lot of flack. You know, they don't like the book. They don't like the movie. They don't like that it was a fan fiction. Nobody likes it. You know what, people? It's a generally fun
book. Did you say City of Bones was a fan fiction?
Yeah.
Of what?
Harry Potter. As in Cassandra Clare wrote Harry Potter fan fiction before she wrote City of Bones and transformed a lot of that verbatim into her book.
Okay. I do not see any relevance between the two. That is a long stretch of fan fiction.
She changed character names and she changed a lot of them. I don't know. A lot of people don't like it. I like it. I think it's a fun storyline. It's a fantasy. It's not dystopian. It's an urban fantasy, and I enjoy the fantasy genre the most. I think it's my favorite. Magic and fairy tales and fun, mysterious creatures and things like that. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I like it. I'm super excited because Heavenly Fire comes out next summer, and that's the last book.
I'm gonna recommend The Book Thief by Mark Suzak. Mm-hmm. It's a story of a little German girl in Nazi Germany. So it's a really heavy read. So mm-hmm. it's not dystopian and it's not fantasy. It's fictional but it's a really heavy read. It'll make you cry a lot, but it's so good. And the movie trailer just came out last month, and it's got Jeffrey Rush in it, who's one of my favorite people. Anyways, read it. If you've been putting it off, read it, because oh my gosh, you will love it.
Okay. That's our little quip episode of The Transfer. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Remember to visit us at factionfandom.com or email us at factionfandompodcast@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Tumblr at ourfactionisfandom.tumblr.com.
We'll pick up with Divergent again, chapters 9 through 14. 9 through 13, sorry. I am Stephanie.
And I'm Sheree.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening. Mice are cute. Rats are scary. They're big, and they've got these teeth. And these, there's have you ever felt a rat's tail, Steph?
Yes, I have. I tell you what, I don't know necessarily what would be in my fair landscape, but I will tell you that there would be some thematic music playing in the background, because that's what gets me, is it's not necessarily the quiet, it's those weird, you know, making you feel jumpy, okay. And then of course there's that silence.
The movie...
Someone's gonna jump out at me in the middle of... Nothing.
The movie When a Stranger Calls, it's not mm-hmm. scary on me at all. But as soon as you put that music in there, oh, it gets me every time. I mean, I've seen the movie like 10 times, and every time I watch it, it's the music. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's a murder in the house! There's a murder in the house!
He would be an Amity tree hugger, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
What's he gonna do? He's gonna get into Amity and punch...
He'd pick up a ukulele, and he'd learn the ukulele, and he'd sing to her, and he'd serenade her every day outside of her cave.
Cave.
It's underground, right?
Underground. Yeah. She sneaks off. Oh my gosh, it turns into one of those, you know, different factions fall in love together.
There's a bug on my computer. It's big. It's so weird. Oh my god.
Flick it. Flick it with your finger.
I can't touch it. It flies.